On today's episode of What Is YA Anyway, I am talking with author Christine Riccio. She is the author of Again But Better and Better Together. Her career started as a booktuber. You might know her from Poland Bananas Books. And what I found so fascinating about her journey is that she went from a YA fan to a YA author. And in this conversation, we're digging into that as well as her writing process and her experiences. So let's dive right in. I'm really excited to have you on today for What Is YA Anyway, which is my thesis podcast. And so to begin, can you just tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name's Christine. Do you want me to start from like where, like just what I do right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Give us the whole story. Yeah.
Okay. My name is Christine and I went to college for film and TV and I wanted to do screenwriting or some sort of writing. And at the time I didn't think I could write books. Like I just didn't believe that I could like get to the end of a book because it's so long writing wise. Mm-hmm. But like somewhere during my college experience that changed because of Twilight. And yeah, I just was like, you know what? This is about a teen girl and I've been a teen girl and I could write a whole book about this. I just was stuck in the mindset that I'd have to write something as elaborate as the fantasy novels that I was obsessed with, aka Harry Potter. And I was like, this is so daunting, you know? And I'd only read about really men and boys, mm-hmm. and hadn't read since from the point of view of a teenage girl. And that was just like so cool to me to relate in that way. Yeah. So let's see. So I started YouTubing about books because I got obsessed with Twilight and then was looking at all the other YA novels and they were exactly what I wanted to read. So I was devouring all of them, but no one I knew read books. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like posting videos on YouTube just to practice editing. And I really enjoyed editing. And I, again, was majoring in film. So I wanted to do anything. And I ended up kind of smashing together everything I wanted to do by making a YouTube channel about books and reading. And that way I got to edit and, you know, work in that realm. And I got to talk about all the things that were bubbling up inside me. And I didn't have any friends and I got to meet friends on the internet through YouTube. So that's how my YouTube channel started. And after I graduated, I was like, I love doing this and I want to write, but writing is not something that is going to give me like a stable income right out of school. And so I lived with my mom for 2 years where I just solidly like read, filmed, edited, uploaded to YouTube and was a little YouTube troll for 24/7, basically trying to grow my channel into something that could be a job because I saw it was like, I was like the second wave of YouTubers. Mm-hmm. And the first wave was just starting to get sponsorships. Like companies were figuring out that they could work with these YouTubers and market their products. And I was reading books and talking about them all the time. So I was like, I could do this for publishers. Yeah. So when Penguin, the publishing company, reached out and was like, oh, we'd love to meet with you to talk about stuff. I was like, I'd love to meet with you to talk about stuff. I put together like a big PowerPoint about what I could do for them. And about at that time, I was forming this book club with some of my close booktube friends who were also, you know, would love to start working with publishing companies so that they can make this more of a job. And so I pitched Booksplosion, which is my like running online book club, and told them about how we do books of the month and where we could promote like a book that's coming out that we also want to read because we, you know, we're already doing this. Yeah. and we could do A, B, and C. I had like all different examples. I think 22, 23. I was 23 when I did that. And then after that went so well, they hired us for a sample one because it was the first one we had done for a publishing mm-hmm. company. They liked it. And then they immediately hired us for a paid campaign. And then I made meetings with HarperCollins and Disney books and pitched them my same spiel. And yeah, we had, I turned it successfully into a thing that I could, that was giving me a stable income. And then I moved out to California out of my mom's house, which was great.
That's incredible. Like that whole story. Yeah. Of how you started. I was watching it as it was happening.
So cool to hear. That's so cool. Yeah. And then once I felt stable in YouTube and I could feel like it was time for me to start writing, because that's what I wanted to do. And I knew that if I had an audience, then maybe it would help me sell the book. And so in 2015, I was like, as soon as this year's over, I am jumping full time, not full time, but like full steam ahead. Yes. Into writing my first book. And I'm going to let myself just do one video per week, because I, as much as I love doing YouTube, I know that like I want a writing career. And so I need to like have a balance. And yeah, the deeper I've gotten into the writing, the harder it is to keep up all the other socials, because they just keep adding up. Like now you have to do TikTok too.
No,
you have to do reels. You have to be on stories for Instagram to like you. So that's the thing. Yeah. You have to adapt and keep moving onto the different platforms. And so, but I also didn't have the time because I was on deadline that whole year.
Yes.
So like during my free time, I was like, okay, you have to spend 10 minutes on TikTok. Figure this out. What is it? What kind of content do they want? Like what's trending?
I know, he's like sitting here and my mom lives in Massachusetts and I'm in Washington, D.C., but she came to visit me this summer and I'm just like sitting on my phone scrolling, trying, because I do social media management, and I'm just
like, oh my gosh, yes.
Like I'm like, this is my job. I feel like I'm just sitting here on my phone not paying attention to you, but like I'm also working. So this is a very weird dynamic for me, because I feel like I'm not working, but I'm working.
Exactly. And like you have to become like part of the app to create. Yes. For the app, you know. Yes. Like you need to submerge yourself in that content to make the content. So
yeah, that was once, and
that I just, is
you know
here. Yeah, and I'm still them. I feel like I am like a 70% in that app. Like I know kind of what it wants, but I'm not like 100% in any app right now, because writing is so time consuming. I'm so excited to hand in this book. It'll be the first time I'm not on deadline since July of last year. And I'll finally be able to like go back to my socials. Like I love making videos, but like, I hate it when I feel guilty making a video, because I know I have a deadline and I can't be late for the deadline. It's just like, oh, so I'm so excited. And I'm excited to like dive into the TikTok world and like finally like try to figure it out so that I am more on top of my shit over there.
Yeah. The book talk world is so crazy. And in like my mind, I feel like you and Sasha Alsberg and a few other people were like some of the first book influencers that I was like actively following. And then now there's this whole like just vibrant community of people who are hosting book clubs. They're making videos. They're like posting longer content, and it's crazy to see how much it's grown. Like, what do you think of that?
You know, I have been in book content for so long that I actually like don't go there on book talk, because I'm kind of like, it's become something that kind of stresses me out now, because I've been doing it for 13 years. So it just reminds me that I'm not on top of it right now. And like that I need to, it's just like, you know, and there's someone being like, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. Like, that's what that does. Yes. To me. And so my TikTok doesn't really like show me that on my FYP. So that's what it is, right? FYP for you. Yes. Yep. I feel so old right now.
I feel the same way. Like, where am I?
But I, you know, I've done all the trends. I've done like every, like, and the video trends come back around. And a lot of the TikTok books are books we were talking about so long ago on BookTube. And it's like everyone just discovered Colleen Hoover. And I'm like, I've been obsessing over Colleen Hoover since 2013. Like,
and I remember your videos about Colleen Hoover too. I was like, this is taking me back. And now everyone is reading Colleen Hoover.
I know. And like Sarah J. Maas, I was there for like every release since book 3.
So. I know.
Like, I've done all of that stuff. I've done everything. So it feels like it's just coming back around and I'm like, oh, well, I did that. So I would like to do something different. And I would like, I don't want to put the time and effort into doing like repeating myself because I feel obnoxious doing that. Even like, that's why I made a sketch on TikTok about reading in the shower, because it's something that people still always ask me about. And I already made a video about it. Like, it's such an old school video. It was like, again, 2013, but I was like, okay, I'm going to do this again. I get this question all the time, but I'm going to do it like in a way that like makes fun of myself too. And so I did a little like TikTok sketch and that was super fun. And like, I want to do
that video. Watched it when it came out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I was like, yeah, I could read in the shower too.
It's really relaxing if you can't do a bathtub, like do a shower read. But anyway, yeah, I can't wait to get back to doing stuff like that. It's my favorite, but I also love writing, and I it's just like I can't half-ass one thing. Half-ass two things. I have to whole-ass one.
Yeah,
that Ron Swanson quote.
Exactly. Yeah. So what is your writing process like? Is it different for each book or do you follow a similar structure?
It's literally been different for every book. And it's so annoying because I'll try the old method and it just won't work. So for Again But Better, I started just like I wrote an hour every day. And sometimes that would just, you know, balloon into hours and hours because I'd get so caught up in it. Or some days I would be so tired. I'm like, okay, we're going to go to bed an hour later because I need to write an hour. Yeah. And eventually I finished the book after 6 months and I had so much fun writing it. It just poured out of me. I had no pressure because there was no one being like, the deadline for draft one is this day. And then I was making videos the whole time about it. And I got some emails from publishers asking me if I was going to publish it. And I panicked because I knew the, like, don't talk to a publisher until you have an agent. Like, I've just heard that over and over again. So right after my second draft, which I knew was like not good yet, but because I was getting these emails, I was like, I need to talk to an agent. I feel I don't want to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
So I queried and found an agent. And she worked with me for over a year editing the manuscript. So then it was draft 6 that we went on submission with in like late October of 2017. Mm-hmm. And I had started it in January of 2016. So we worked on it for a while and I had just so much fun doing it. I was like whenever I had a deadline, it was the deadline that I set for myself and I would honor those. And it was the best. It was so easy the first time around because I didn't feel the pressure of everything else. I didn't even feel the pressure of like my audience, which I now feel the pressure of a lot. So for Better Together, I was like so stressed because the response from Again But Better was so great. But there were also so many people that just didn't want me to write books because I was a YouTuber, which is so dumb now. Like now it's literally like I was kind of ahead of like what people would accept. You know, now everyone has to have an audience to like sell their book.
Yeah.
And everyone has to be on TikTok. And it's just like I was already doing that. And they were like, well, you're just a YouTuber. I was like, no, I've been doing this so that I have an audience for the book.
Yes.
And this is a lot of work to build. So and now I feel like people are more accepting of that, but there's still the people, there's always the trolls that just don't want people to succeed that aren't them. There's just, because, you know, with a lot of people when you're young, and I've experienced it too, when you're young and you see someone doing something you want to do and you feel like they didn't go the right path, you want to shit on it. And I think that's a lot of what was happening to Sasha when her book came out. It was just like people were so cruel and there was no reason to be that mean to somebody for releasing a book. And I didn't understand it till Again But Better came out. And I was just like, this is so, and it just made me so anxious because it was such a safe space before that to be on BookTube. And then I would see like, is Again But Better any good as the headline of a video? And it's just like, I thought, I just thought everyone was my friend over there. You know, you just have this image of like this place where you could just be yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah. And when you come into it and people are like trying to tear apart your book for some reason or another, just to, you know, just for clicks just because, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of warps the whole space. So that's also kind of warped my, the way I think of book content in general, mm-hmm. because I have books out. That's another reason why I don't really go on book talk, because it just throws off my whole mental game if I run into something negative.
Yeah.
And so I just have to like take care of that bubble so I can keep writing, mm-hmm. Because you know, the imposter syndrome comes hard when it comes. You have to protect yourself against it. And so I've just kind of like limited my exposure. Like I never go on Goodreads. There's just no reason to.
A wild never space in the review section of any book. I go in there and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. And so Better Together, like it was during the pandemic that I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the whole thing like in troll mode for like a month and a half, basically. I had 40,000 words down and then I wrote to 160K in a month and a half. And then I like edited that. I got a second draft of that done before I had to hand it in. Mm-hmm. And then the whole year, it was just like I had a month off and then I would get it back and have 2 weeks or a month, yes, depending on the draft, to turn it around another draft.
Okay.
And so it was like those 2 weeks kept falling in the worst time. Like I got a puppy and it was like, okay, you get it back. You have 2 weeks. And I was like, I have a new dog in here. I don't know if you have a dog, but it's just like,
I do.
You get a puppy. Yeah.
My little dog's on my lap right now.
Yeah. When they're a puppy, it's like a newborn child.
It is. They wake up so early.
Oh my God. They poop and pee everywhere.
Yep.
And you just have to be on top of them at all times. So that was a terrible 2 week period. I didn't sleep from the dog and I was like trying to do a new draft. And then the next draft came during the election week. And you know, 2020 election was like that the was most stressful, stressful time. It was just like, I just kept finding it hilarious and sad. Like, I'm
why this timing? Why now?
Why? Yeah. So Better Together was a completely different, it was just very stressful because of the pandemic too. It was just like,
hold on.
It was just compounded. And then this book, I have been, so the release of Better Together was completely different because it was during the pandemic and it just wasn't the same. Like I didn't get it in front of as many eyes because it was hard. It's hard to gauge what the publishing company was thinking because they weren't like, they don't tell me that like they're completely depending on me to promote the book.
Okay.
Like, but I did such a good job with Again But Better. They were like, oh, we don't have to do much for Better Together because she's doing it. But the reason Again But Better was reaching so many people is that my YouTube channel was really healthy at the time. I was like posting all the time and I was able to post on all my other channels all the time. Like I wasn't in a pandemic. Yeah. And during the pandemic and because I was on deadline constantly for Better Together, it wasn't like Again But Better where I had like all this time because I wasn't on a schedule yet. Mm-hmm. I didn't have time to keep all my channels as healthy. And then when we were doing the tour, it wasn't like getting in front of new people because it was all my audience who was hearing me talk about it and talk about the tour. And I wasn't going to physical places. So you had to be following me to know that there's a link here to watch the virtual tour and all that stuff. And everyone who came was so great. And there was still like a successful turnout in terms of a virtual tour, but it's not the same. They're not thinking that in terms of like that, I'm a digital creator. I'm always here. It's not like something special to come and see a virtual tour. And people were coming to multiple events, but they're not buying the book at every event because they're all the same people. So it was a completely different thing. And when it wasn't as successful as the first one, it was like, what happened? And I'm like, I tried to talk about this. I actually sent an email to my agent panicking about like the book coming out during the pandemic. Cause I was like, it's not, if without the tour, I'm not reaching new people, is it like worth it to push the book? But they're like, oh no, it's fine. Like, and I think it's also a lack of having this type of author experience, like someone who's a YouTuber, who's a booktuber, like it's just like a different path that I've taken. So the marketing is different and has to be different as well. And so for this book, I'm going to be very clear about anything I'm worried about, like for, and for Better Together also, what was the other thing? It was coming out on a day with all these huge releases. I don't know if you remember that, like Emily Henry's new book came out, Casey McQuiston's new book came out.
Yes.
Tahara Mafi's new book came out. Gail Forman's new book came out. Like all these huge authors had releases that week. And I was just like, the internet is following all of us. So there's only so much you're going to see on your feed even.
Yes.
Because we're all posting. It's just like these need to be scattered during a pandemic.
Yeah. And it's hard to know too, like who you're going to reach when you're posting something.
Yes.
And also like for the person now, like with the way that the social media algorithms have changed and the way you're engaging with the person to see their content, it's all very like confused, I feel, and definitely probably not helpful at all for you.
Yeah, it was just like, I feel like a very experimental release. And I was worried about it because I could see what was going to happen because I'm always in that space. Yeah. But it was hard to like project those worries and have them be taken seriously because it's never happened before. Mm-hmm. And also because I was just kind of like, I guess I'll just go with it. I guess it'll be okay. But I'm like learning that I just always have to speak up if I have any like gut worry, because I do know my audience and, and I am aware of how my socials are doing. And I don't think they were thinking that my socials weren't as active as they were before, you know? So I have to just talk and be communicative. For book three, my process has been so different this time around. I'm finally rolling really well, but it was like very stunted for a long time because I had a second writing project that I'm not allowed to talk about, but I'm very excited about. And I had to keep switching back to it because that was on a tighter time crunch. Mm-hmm. And if I wasn't able to put all my attention on a first draft, I like don't move very quickly at all. Yeah. I need to be like a little troll, like just constantly in the story.
Yeah.
So I'm finally there. And what I'm doing every day is like writing down where I am in the word count and then having a goal number like 2000 words higher, because I know I can write 2000 words, but obviously I'm always hoping that I'll get caught in it and go further than that. And so that's what's been happening most days. And that's been really nice. And I've been vlogging it. And I'm just so relieved to not have the other project just like breathing down my throat. Because what would happen is I'd get into the book and I'd be like, yes, I'm finally rolling. And then I'd get a call and it'd be like, so we need the next draft of this in 3 weeks. So I'd be like, okay, I guess I'm going to put down book three and like go back to the other project. And
So in this world, like now you're very much so like steeped into the young adult author world. What was it like transitioning from like being a reader and being in that world where you're kind of like following book releases and understanding the audience and like being in the audience to being like both in the audience, but also outside of it as an author?
Yeah. I mean, it's very meta. So Again But Better has so many, I feel like, so many YA jokes in it. You know, it was kind of like an ode to my love of YA. And I'm constantly trying to remember that I'm writing what I want to read. That's why I write what I do write, because I know I wanted to read it and I still would like to read it. So when I was, and that's like characters in their early 20s. That's what I wanted to read. And that's what I want to write. And it's this constant kind of pushback because sale, like the bookstores don't consider. I mean, some probably do now because we're like kind of pushing the age, but they don't, think of YA as like 18 or younger. Mm-hmm. And I am like dying on the hill of like, you're still a young adult all through your early 20s. Like, honestly, I didn't consider myself an adult till I turned 30 2 years ago. And I was like, am I not a young adult?
Do I still count?
I know. Like, I'm not an old adult. I'm just adult.
Yeah, now you're just in the, just a plain adult now.
Just regular.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, with Again But Better, when I was talking to editors that were interested in it, like there was one that was very adamant. She's like, we're going to age it down. It's going to be 18. Like, and I was just like, I can't, no, I'm very firm stance on the 20-year-old. And even my editor, my current editor, she was nervous that when Barnes and Noble read the book, they would see how old she is and not want to take it, like not want to put it in the store because it didn't have a spot. And
interesting.
And I was like, I really pushed for it. I was like, 20 is the handle. I wrote my readers, my author note, kind of like explaining that sentiment. And she was like, okay, the author's note really like lays it out really nice. So I think we're good. So that was great. And I'm just so glad she took that leap with me because I was so nervous that I was going to have to age her down and then maybe not do it and like self-publish, which I think would be so stressful. It sounds like so difficult.
That sounds scary.
Anyway, with Better Together, I really wanted her to be like 23 and the other sister to be 21. But I ended up having Siri is turning 19 and Jamie is turning 21. Yeah. And they were okay with that. Yeah. For this book, I don't say how old she is, but she's 23.
I love that. I love that. And I agree that like, okay, 12 to 18, yeah, you're a young adult, but you're also still a young adult when you're in college and you're still a young adult when you get out of college. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I've been doing in this project and researching is like, what is the definition of a young adult and how does that relate to the way that we market these books and also to who reads them and who doesn't read them, who feels excluded, included. And one of the articles I was reading was that they want to push the age back to 25. And
that's amazing.
Like, now that I think makes a lot of sense because we also have like the new adult genre and it gets very confused, I think, because
it's not taken seriously, I feel like. Exactly. So there's no section.
Yeah, there's really no section for it. No one exactly knows what to make of it. They're like, is this adult? Is it not adult? Who's reading it? Not reading it. And I think that if there was more of a just like consensus of like, yes, it's young adult, but like just a little bit more matured young adult or something like that, it might make more sense for both marketing, but also for readers.
Yeah. Or if they like did, if teen and young adult were different, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
But they're the same in every section. Like the teen is just synonymous with young adult. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I completely agree with like, it's so confusing. And it, honestly, my next book, like book four, I don't think I'm going to pitch it as young adult just because I feel so frustrated with like the pushback constantly about the age and about just like, I don't know, these expectations about cursing.
Yes. There's a lot of expectations about like what happens in a young adult.
Yeah. Book. Yeah. Yeah. And there's just like, I remember in Again But Better and they're legal age to drink in London, but it was just like, we don't want to mention too much of different like alcoholic drinks. So I just like didn't mention the alcohol drinks. And like, I just want to write now, like as I'm getting older, I want to write characters like in their later 20s. Like I just want to like tackle different issues while they're still like, I was just that age. So I remember like those sort of things. So I young adult, the constraints on young adult are very confusing because when you're a young adult, you are experiencing all these things that like we're talking about, like you're drinking for the first time or going to pubs for the first time. Like you are trying to find yourself. You are having the quarter life crisis. You are worrying about a career and like all those things that are so confusing. So it really should not end at 18. And I think slowly like editors are taking that risk, but I do think they still kind of worry about it because of sales and like depending on who's running sales at these different stores. Yeah. They could turn down the book that they work so hard on. So yeah, I understand it.
Like, yeah, that makes sense. It does.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just frustrating. Like that person has to get with it, those salespeople. Like we want to read young adult in our early 20s.
Do you think that that constraint too on what can be included in young adult books, often in like on the editorial side, kind of excludes some adults that maybe would want to read YA but feel like they're not, like it's not accepted for them to read it?
You know, I always kind of scoffed at that because I knew lots of adults read young adult, but you know, there were videos about people being like, I grew out of YA, and I just didn't like the way it was stated because it sounded condescending for all of us who like hadn't grown out of YA.
I know. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And I understand what they mean. Like in retrospect now, I understand that you just get tired about reading someone of the same age all the time who is going through things that might not be something a teenager goes through. And it's like, this person is not 18. They're 25. Like a lot of times
it
feels like that.
Yeah.
So and it gets frustrating after a while when you read like hundreds of books like that. You're like, okay, I just want them to say that this person's like this age, or I want to read about someone that's a little older, because it's frustrating to go have these adult issues, but then they're in these teenage bodies and like teenage experience.
Yes, yes.
I do think the marketing does affect how many adults pick it up. Mm-hmm. So for me, like my books are crossover. I feel like adults can enjoy them because I've gotten better. So nostalgic and Better Together is, again, it's like that, like finding yourself after college feeling. Yeah. But Better Together, this is another thing. Like it had the girls on the cover in their bedrooms. Mm-hmm. And I knew like, I knew that was more of a, like a YA image. You know?
Yep.
And I do think that affected its ability to like find an adult audience as well. And I'm really happy that the paperback is going to have a more crossover cover, because you do think high school when you see girls in their bedroom.
Yes. Yeah.
And, like both these girls are like, they're not in college. So they're already like going about their career path journeys, because they're doing these creative careers that didn't necessarily need a degree.
Yeah. So I want to ask a bit about like how you write scenes or include the parents in your books. There's that one scene in Again But Better, the very painful scene between Shane and her parents, where she says, like, this is what I want to do. And how do you choose to write the parents in the manner in which you do? And do you feel that like in young adult and even pushing into like adult, new adult area, that the parents need to be present, or that they need to be excluded for the main character to really reach like their full agency?
I think that if your parents are alive, they're a part of your life and a part of how you consider your future. And what they think affects what you do very deeply. And if it's not affecting what you do, it's still affecting how you feel. Mm-hmm. So, and your mental health. And so I do think it's very important to like know what their presence is doing to the main character.
Yeah.
Because it really affects Shane. Obviously, it's why it's the trigger for her to lie and go abroad doing a different program. And I think that's something we all feel so deeply in college. Like we want our parents to be proud of us, but also there's this struggle to do what we actually want to do. And it's not necessarily what they think is best for us. Mm-hmm. And I tend to write like parents who are flawed. And a lot of parents are flawed. We all have to deal with our parents' issues and how they affect us. And as we come into adulthood, because we start to realize that they're flawed. Yeah. And I'm like fascinated by that, the complex that creates with like young adults. And it's been fascinating journey for me, like the last 10 years, just like seeing my parents with new eyes and seeing their past. Like we also just don't ask much about our parents' past. And if they don't decide to share it with us, we don't know until we're older. And we're like, what did you do when you were in your 20s? Like, and it's so strange also to think like my mom had two kids at this time, and I'm just like, it's a completely different mindset. So they're looking at you through more sometimes that their own lens, when really like you're on a completely different path and you have to deal with that. So in conclusion, I love knowing what the parents' effect has been on the lead character's psyche. I think it's really integral to understanding them as a layered human being.
I agree. And I found that I've been talking to some scholars, and we were talking about the way that like parents have were so absent in YA up until like the 2000s ish or like 2010s, really. Or
like the 2010s. Yeah.
Yeah. And because they were just not there. Like we had these 16-year-olds that were just, I don't know, floating in somewhere with no family around.
A lot of orphans.
Yes. Lots of orphans. And then all of a sudden they're like in these scenarios. And you're like, where are any parental figures? Like, anywhere. And now it's so nice to see people writing about like, yeah, your parents are involved because you're 18 years old or you're 17 or whatever, even yeah. into your 20s. And as you grow yeah. into an adult, your parents are still involved.
Yes.
And I think that that was definitely like a key thing that YA was missing. And even though they thought that young adults didn't need their parents there because like the whole thing was, you know, they were supposed to be living their own lives and having these character arcs, but like, it's not complete without the parents.
Yeah. It's been I loved. I loved Cassandra Clare's novels because you get like such an intense ancestry of all the characters, and even if the parents aren't there, there are parental figures there in all the various. Oh my gosh, what are the Shadowhunter like churches called?
Institutes.
Like every institute has someone heading in. Even Charlotte, who's only 23 in like the 1800s, is acting as a parent figure.
Yes, like there are adults there. Like you feel like there are still adults there, and they're still kind of answering to someone, even if you know it's like the Clave out.
Yes,
there.
Yes, the law is the law.
Yes. Always in my head, I'm pronouncing everything wrong. I feel like in those books, I'm always like Idris. I don't know.
I think I call it Idris. I don't remember now.
I wanted to ask you, do you find that it's easier to get into the headspace of a character where you're not too far removed from their age? What do you think it would be like if you were writing a young adult book and trying to get into the headspace of 20-year-old Shane when you're like 40 or 45?
So I think it'd be harder because even now, when I went back to write that extra chapter, I was very much in like Jamie and Ciri's head. It definitely had to do, like I was 25 when I started writing that book, and I very vividly remembered all the emotions that I was having when I was 20. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another reason why like so many people intensely related to it, because I really like it was so fresh in my head. And I was like, I have to get it down now, like all these insecurities and stuff. And that's another reason why I wanted it to be 20 years old, because all her insecurities and stuff are stuff that typically when you're 20, or you think that when you're 20, everyone's already done it. Everyone's already like been in relationships and had sex and all this stuff that that was such a deep insecurity. And I think so many people experience it.
Absolutely.
And I really think that it was important that I wrote it at that time, because if I did it now, I'd still be able to do it, but I don't think it would feel as raw, because she has like all these journal entries that I feel like were like these intense thoughts that I had at that time that they still remembered so well. And I went back and watched all my videos from that time to like kind of get in a 20-year-old Christine's mindset.
Yeah.
And I watched like movies that I had watched at that time. I went full like 20-year-old, and I wasn't far from it.
Deep
so
in
it
that was wormhole.
Yeah. And I was able to get back into it like when I was writing Better Together for that extra chapter, but it took me a couple days like to shift back into it. And it was so weird. I was like, wow. And it was that moment that I realized that I was so thankful that I wrote it when I did. Mm-hmm. And that's why like now that I am like in my early 30s, I'm like, okay, I really want to write something about like going into your 30s, like that age before it's not as fresh again, you know, like
before I feel removed from it.
So for book four, like she's gonna be like 28 29 30. I wanted to write about quarter life crisis. That's why even Better Together, when I couldn't write them older, older, you know, when they're kind of older, but they're not doing college. So we're kind of skipping it. Like I kind of hacked it so that they're still in that stage, even though they're younger. But I feel like it's obviously possible. It's just not as raw It's not as fresh.
No, like it's right there. You can just grab it and you're like, okay, yes. I still feel these. And I felt it when I was reading her journal entries. I was like, this is definitely something like I could probably go to my journal and read something very similar because it was just written in that voice that was like, yes, this is what a 20-year-old is thinking and saying. And I also liked that the journal entries, they just felt like something you would pick up and write. It wasn't something like, you know, like wildly poetic or like out there, because I feel like when I pick up my journal, I'm just jotting down my thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love reading that. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really nice. I was like, this is real.
Yeah. That I didn't realize until after I wrote Again But Better. And then everything I write, I like want to do journal entries in that I got obsessed with journal entries from the American Girl Amelia's Notebook. I don't know if you ever.
Yeah. Yep. American Girls. Yes, I have.
Yeah, they would sell like these notebooks, like Amelia's notebook, and she would like write in it all the time, just like all her thoughts and stuff. And she was like in third grade or something. And I thought it was like so cool. And then I read like The Amazing Days of Abby Hayes, and she was like in fifth grade, and she just wrote like all her thoughts in these journals. And I just loved having that like direct insight to someone's psyche and like their thoughts, because it makes you feel like your thoughts are not as dumb and your thoughts are not as like weird, and you know, everyone's thinking the same thing. It normalizes it and makes you less insecure.
And rolling off of that, you write in the first person perspective. How important is it that you write in that POV? And do you see yourself maybe doing like third person, or do you like the immediacy that comes with first person, which is typical in especially in young adult?
Yeah, I feel like so much closer to the protagonist when it's in first person. Mm-hmm. I've tried third person and I just don't love it as much. I don't think it's as funny and comedic at times as I want to be. And I've thought about it, you know, I'm like, okay, I want to challenge myself in that way. But at the same time, I want my books to feel really raw and like internal monologue-y, and you don't get that from third person. Like, and honestly, the more I read romance novels, because I thought it was like a no-no in adult writing, but like every romance novel I love is in the first person.
Yeah.
And they're hilarious and they're very voicey, and that's my favorite thing. And so I feel like that barrier is coming down. And if it's not down yet, it's something, there's a clear argument to be made that the books I write are like the same sort of voiciness as regular romance novels. Yeah. Like my books are romances, but they're like not considered romances because they're in the young adult bracket. And it's like, no.
that's crazy to me too. Like yesterday I was talking to Rachel Lynn Solomon about her young adult books, and she was talking about like them just as romances. She was like, these are rom-coms. They're romances. Yes, they're young adult characters, but like they are romance. And I was like, yes, we need to start just talking about, instead of just grouping all the YA together.
Yes.
No, there's like YA
there's
romance.
Genres.
There's fantasy. There's sci-fi. And these are all different, and they take like different, you know, there's a different craft to writing each of those genres. It's not just writing YA.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's ridiculous that it's just this giant umbrella constantly that people want to be like, you write YA. It's actually, I write rom-coms. That's what I tell people. Yeah. I write rom-coms. Okay. And they're about 20-year-olds. So, so they're older YA.
There's nothing like, I firmly believe there is nothing like a good rom-com. And also when you get into the zone of writing a rom-com and you're like bantering almost with yourself, but writing, and it's just
so fun. It's the best. that's why my first drafts are so long, because I get to know the characters through them like chatting and bantering, and I'll just let them go on and on. And I'm like, oh wow, I wrote 2,000 words like in a half an hour, but it's all like one conversation.
Yes, the one conversations where you get into that conversation wormhole where you're just writing, writing, and then you're like, wow, okay, it's like an entire chapter of their dialogue.
Yeah, and I should probably move to the next scene.
Like, have they really done anything? No, they just had a conversation, but I liked listening to them.
I love conversations. Like, I just... my favorite movies, I don't talk about this much because I don't like when people don't like my favorite movie. You know that like insecurity that when you're like going to share it, it's like, don't not like it. And Before Sunrise. Do you know that movie?
No, I've never seen this movie.
Okay. Well, it's one of like the core things that were like, that spoke to me. It was like, write your book, Christina. Cause I had been thinking about writing this book, this again, but better. And, I watched this movie and I read Gail Form Is Just One Day. That was the other thing that I was like, okay, write your story because people it's something that it would be fun to read. So, the movie is about this guy who meets a girl on the train and he's traveling around Europe and he's going to get on a plane the next day. And he's getting off in Vienna cause that's where his flight is from. And he starts talking on the train and he's like, do you want to get off the train with me? Cause like, I'm really enjoying our conversation. And they just walk around Vienna and fall in love. And they're just like, they're all night together and they have the most amazing conversations. And literally anytime I need inspiration and I feel like I'm stuck, I watch the movie and it makes me so happy. And I'm just like, I can write dialogue forever. It's fine. They do it here and it's beautiful.
I'm going to have to watch that because I love dialogue. I love reading it, writing it. And
you're
just
going to love these movies.
I'm so excited. So what is your process writing dialogue? How do you do it?
It's my favorite thing to do. Like if I could, I would just write fucking dialogue. I honestly, like once I get into the head of the characters or even before that, I just like start, you know, like you said, bantering with myself, like, yeah, you know, I love doing that. It's so funny. Like, cause I have a lot of social anxiety. So before I go into social situations, like I will just imagine like what I'd say and then like imagine what the people would say back and like have a conversation in my head. I'm like, yes. Oh, it's going to go fine. And then I'll say the thing and the person won't say something clever like I imagined. And then it won't go back and forth.
You messed up our conversation.
And so I was like, I could write this better. Could you stop ruining it? Like before dates and stuff, I'm like, oh, I could ask this question and that will be like really cute. And then like it dies and I'm like, you killed a great conversation.
Would have been a great rom-com, but you ruined it.
Literally, like that happens all the time now that I'm like back in the dating world. I'm so annoyed with like how bad people are at talking.
Do you even read romance? Come on, people.
Like, get with it. But like I had this insecurity about making my main character like books after my first book got the main thing that people like to attack it about. It was that the character liked too many things that I liked. But I also think that's why so many people loved it, because so many people like the same things. So for this third book, I was like, screw this. It's for better together. I was like, fine. I'm making them like all different random shit.
But you want a different? I'll give it to you.
Oh yeah. That was my mindset. I'm like, why did I do that? And for this book, I'm like, screw it. She loves romance and she's like totally just looking for her happy ending and it's just not happening. So that's been really fun because she's constantly like, well, in this romance, like this is what should happen.
Yeah. Like, why isn't this ending happening?
Excuse me.
Excuse me. You're messing up my perfect world.
Yes. Yes. So I'm loving that.
That's another question I have. I mean, I've always felt like I have always loved young adult. I still love it now. I still read it all the time. And I feel like there's just this magical quality to getting into a young adult book. And I was wondering, like, what do you think that is about YA that makes it so just immersive? Like you get into these worlds and they stick with you for so long.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the ones like Cassandra Clare that we started reading when we were younger.
Yeah.
They stick with us. I feel like because at that time we're especially absorbent of everything that we read and take in.
Yeah.
But reading YA now and getting sucked in, I feel like part of that is the first person and there's no fear to, I feel like, share all your raw feelings in the characters. And that also, you immediately connect really hard to these characters and you can immediately see yourself in that world. And I feel like that's part of YA's magic. Like how easy it is to slip in and how easy fantasy makes it to to imagine you yourself going through the situation. Like Clary is our portal into the world because she doesn't know it. So we could easily just slip into that. And Bella was so easy to slip into because she didn't have many details except for the things that all teenage girls experience, that feeling that they're not like cool enough to be noticed by the really hot guy at school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's so easy to be like, that's me.
Yes. Yeah. You can just so easily be that person. Yeah.
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 And they're less, they're less flowery. There's less like extraneous detail. Mm-hmm. I feel like in a lot of YA that kind of, when you pick up a classic, you can want to fall asleep because it's going so slowly. YA yep. goes much faster.
Yep.
And it just like gets the good stuff.
Yes. Yeah. You're there. You're in it.
Yes. Yes.
So a lot of what I want to like be doing with this project is showing that there can be classic YA books that are like very textually rich. We can analyze them, yes. talk about them. And I'm wondering if you could choose a YA canon, so to say, what would you put in it?
Well, I would put The Infernal Devices in there. Scythe trilogy.
Oh, yes.
For sure. Have you read that one?
Yes. Way back.
Oh my God. It's excellent. And there's just so much to pick apart and analyze and talk about. I might take Paper Towns by John Green.
Ooh, good one. Good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And even, you know, Hank Green's duology, I feel like there's so much to talk about in terms of our pop culture and technology and the all the metaphor you could take from like the alien invasion we see happening and the way that it happens. Did you read those yet?
Yes, I read that. Oh, and I want.
And then let's see. Maybe Addie LaRue, even though it's adult, but like she's in her early 20s. Because there's so much to think about in Addie and how she is stuck at this same age for so long and how like each time period treats her as like a young woman. And there's just, it's endlessly fascinating. And
there's so much to pick apart there. Oh, that book was so well written. Beautiful. I love all those choices.
It was, yes, written wizardry.
Yes, so good. Absolutely. My final question is, might be a little bit difficult, but if you could only pick one young adult book to read for the rest of your life, which one would it be and why?
Oh, no.
It's like choosing a child.
I'm just like constantly like, let me see what's on my bookshelf. Well, we just talked about Addie LaRue. You know, my answer for this used to be Deathly Hallows. Mm-hmm. And now I just feel really weird about choosing Harry Potter books because the author has been so terrible. Yeah. Right now, can I choose like a trilogy? No, that doesn't.
Yeah,
count.
No, you can choose a trilogy. Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah.
Is it not cheating?
I make the rules.
All right. Well, if I could choose a trilogy, I'd probably choose the Infernal Devices trilogy because I just love it so much. And it has this nostalgia factor for me because, you know, I read it like in my late teens, early 20s. But I do really love Addie LaRue right now, and I've only read it twice, so I could definitely read that a bunch more times.
I love that. The Infernal Devices is one of my favorites, too. Mm. Ever get, like, do you still feel the same way you felt when, like, authors interact with you that you have done videos on, like, as you would have when you were, like, first making the videos, now that you're in this world?
It depends on the author. Like with Cassandra Clare, I still get like, I just still get so clammy. Like I still like, I can't believe she did an event with me, like a virtual event for Better Together. I blacked out like the whole time. I don't know what happened when she asked me such good questions. Yeah. And she was like asking questions like that I would ask her. And I just like couldn't compute. I was like, I can't think of anything to answer because I can't believe you just asked me that. And she would like pick out details from the books that I was like this is such a random little thing that was in there. Like, how are you saying it? Please, I can't handle it. So with her, it's still like that. With if I met John and Hank, I think I'd still be like, hi. But like with Sarah, I love talking to her, Sarah J. Maas. Yeah. Like we have such great chemistry together. I love doing events with her. Like they're just like full of laughter and fun. So like she feels like very much like I could be friends. Like, I mean, I guess we are friends, but you know, we're just like acquaintance friends because I don't talk to her all the time.
Yeah.
Adam is so great. Like he's the first author that ever like talked to me when I was like when we're in a group of booktubers, a lot of authors like don't like talk to you like you're just like a person, you know, like they're just like, oh, it's the booktubers, but he would like befriend us like we're all our own people, you know.
yeah
That was like really nice. So it depends on the person.
That's just, it's,
well, I, this was so fun, and you were so fun to talk to. Thank you so much for having me on your thesis podcast.
Thank you for being here. So, wow, the energy in that conversation was fantastic. Talking to Christine was such a like a dream for me because I always watched her booktube, and she's pretty much exactly the same to talk to as you see in her YouTube videos. She has such a great energy, and I think that this conversation, you can really learn so much about what it feels like to get your footing as an author and craft and being a YA fan. And if you are a fan of these books, you can definitely relate to so much of what she said. And really, it's just a fun, fun conversation to listen to and to relate to. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I'll see you back here next time. Bye.